You're caught up on your news, weather, traffic, sports. Your March Madness brackets are all up to date. Well, you're going to love our next guest. Frank Landry has got quite a story to tell. As March Madness gets underway, everyone talks about brackets and pools, and you know you're doing this right now. Frank Landry is going to talk to us about the issue of gambling involving college players and coaches. He says coaches need to know and plan to avoid miscommunication between themselves and players, and how best to head off gambling influences on players. No individual game or tournament is safe from an attempted point-shaving gambler and their big bets. According to Frank, over the past 29 years, he has been on a mission to uncover exactly what happened to him during his Georgia Tech basketball days when he was cut loose. He says, having been called a hero in a game against Missouri, and you know how that is, right? You win an important game, it's like, yes, you are the man. And then, after an accusation, everything changed overnight. Wow. An incredible story. Frank is the author of From Hero to Zero, a true story involving the FBI and investigations into wiretapping and point shaving. Man, what a great guest we have for where we're at on the calendar. Frank Landry, welcome to the Ed Till Show on Starcom Radio Network. A pleasure.
Yeah, Ed, nice to be with you.
You bet. Listen, let's go to the beginning. You're a player. You're the hero. You beat Missouri. What position did you play? You're a forward, a guard, center?
I was a guard. I was the point guard. I started the plays, controlled the ball. And at that point in time, there were players at UNC and also players at NC State that had actually been caught influencing games, and they got $2,500 a game, it was reported, worth $20,000 today. So they were willing to, you know, put the money on the line. And in 1961, too, there was a game, and Georgia Tech played NC State, and two players from NC State, they were supposed to influence the game, and it was a six-point spread, and they didn't make the spread, and the gamblers actually pointed the gun in their belly and took the money back out in the parking lot that night. This story was told by Rob Christensen, a sports writer, and I only read it about 2 months ago and found out that it happened, and I was in the game. But wow. I, of course, was not involved, did not know a thing about that. That carried over into my own junior year when I was the leading scorer on the team and did have that hero game. And then I took a call from a friend of my dad's, and it was at the dorm. And I was told this story 25 years later by my coach. That call, the fella congratulated me on making all tournament and being the leading scorer, and he was a friend of my dad's, and said something like, you know, your dad doesn't bet the game unless he knows you're going to play. And I said, well, my dad's going to know if I'm going to play or not, if I'm sick or not sick, and I don't get into his gambling activities. But anyway, that call was tapped from there. According to my coach, they began to follow the team and me, thinking that because I took that call, that I was going to be shaving points. Then it turned out that my own failure, I missed a one-on-one in the last 90 seconds against 10th-ranked Mississippi State, and stole the ball, then got fouled again, then missed another one-on-one, and then missed a bunny layup, and we lost by 1 point. And the story on the newspaper, the Atlanta Journal, was I went from hero to goat. But actually, I went all the way to zero, because that was the last nail, pretty much, that sealed my fate. And I was in a I did score 18 points against Tennessee. I scored 21 a couple of times the first two or three games. I was still the leading scorer. We go to Alabama, as my recollection has it, and at Alabama, I was in the locker room after we worked out. My name was on the board, five players to start. Coach Hyder walks in, walks to the board, wipes my name out, and puts another boy's name in there. I didn't play the whole game. I never was told why. And, of course, that and the fact that I had started the drink as a sophomore, I took the easy way out. I went to the Black Sheep Club. I got drunk. And on a Monday, I was called in the office. I'd broken curfew. Never been called in his office before. And he asked me the question. He said, "Do you know why you're here?" And the answer I gave is one I've had many nightmares over. I said, "I guess I do." And he thought I was confessing.
Right.
And I thought I was telling him that I had broken curfew.
Wow.
So I was benched after being the leading scorer, didn't play again, and I was given a ball on the side goal. It was like I had the scurvy. Nobody could play with me, and I couldn't play in practice. And then the next year I came back, I was kicked off the team. And fortunately, though, the Dodd rule must have come into being. That's right when Coach Bobby Dodd was athletic director. They gave me a full scholarship in golf. Of course, I was on the golf team every year as well, but I didn't play my basketball, which was my God. You know, I lived
right
for that.
Right.
I sacrificed for that. And when it was gone, I took this spiral down into the pits in my senior year. So that's kind of the nutshell of
gotcha.
The story.
Gotcha. No, I hear you loud and clear. And just so I think I got it right, you get a random call that is complimentary because you've been playing well.
Right.
It's mentioned to you briefly, your dad pays attention to when you play, and that kind of controls his bets. That
right,
was the first thing
right.
that sounded weird. Why is somebody telling you that? Even if that were true, why should a stranger that called you, a friend of your dad's?
Yeah. And
yeah.
What he wanted to do, he wanted to call if dad was going to bet big
yeah.
to see if I was sick or if I was going to play.
Right.
And that's when I said, well, that's kind of crazy because my dad's going to know. Well, to go back and tell the story, finish the thought, 25 years later, when I go to this alumni game and I get talking to my old coach, and finally it registers that in my mind that somebody, the FBI, said the FBI was following the team. So I said to the coach, I said, "Surely you didn't think I was fixing games." It just finally dawned on me that maybe that was this curious thing that had happened to me. And he kind of stood up straight like, you know, I'd hit him with a two before, and he said, "You know, we should talk about that." And
wow.
The next day we did.
Wow.
Well, that 18th game,
yep.
He finally told me the mystery of why I didn't play the whole game. He said, "Frank," he said, "at the hotel we got a call for you right before the game. And I thought you were fixing the game. So I didn't play you
wow.
the whole game."
Wow.
And then I, you know, I thought back. My dad came to a game at Georgia Tech when we were playing Kentucky, and early in the year I started, of course, in the game against Kentucky at Kentucky, and I'd scored 14 points, hit 50% of my shots or so, and had a really decent game, I thought. Well, I didn't get to play the whole game against Kentucky, and I realized my dad was in the stands, and because my dad was in the stands, Coach Hyder thought that maybe I was going to do something to influence a bet. Because what happened was, in the Mississippi State game, my dad was in the stands, and after the game, up in the locker room taking the shower, my head was buried in my hands. I had a terrible failure in the game, and my dad came up with his coat and tie on and shine shoes, walked in the shower, grabs me by the arm, pulls me out, gives me a hug, and he whispers in my ear, he said, "Son, if this is the worst thing that ever happens to you, you'll be lucky." Well, the coach thought he was telling me.
Right.
Good job.
Ay, ay, ay. You talk about circumstances misleading people. It's crazy. So let me ask then. Now it makes 2020 hindsight. You see all of this. What would have been the thing? Was there ever a way for you to have discovered this earlier and clarified yourself? Or with these specific circumstances, you were just dead from the start here? I mean, even the coincidence about your play, the bunny layup, the fouls, the free throws,
right.
Your old man's up there, your old man's a well-known gambler in your town. Would your dad have been somebody who talked up at the bar that he's got action? Well, I mean, is he...
Well, he was a guy that everybody knew had action.
Yeah.
And I remembered, and I made note in the book, and in high school, we had a team that we were really a big competition to, and it was Jasper, Indiana. And I was in Indiana at that time in high school ball and played for Vin Sands. And we were at Jasper. We were down 25, and we came back. We pushed it into overtime. We lose the game right at the end, and I score 38 points. I get home. And I'm thinking my dad and mom, you know, be kind of pleased with the game. And my dad sat me at the kitchen table for hours telling me the times I could have sealed that game. And I got to thinking when he was doing that and drilling me, I thought, you know, he must have bet the game real big. And little did I know at that time that his gambling, and that's why when the book is on at $2.99 on Amazon.com under Frank Landry, L-A-N-D-R-E-Y, From Hero to Zero, and $2.99, well, that in that book, they'll be able to see where I realized that, you know, my dad's gambling. I did a subtitle for that download on the Kindle. And it's My Gambler's Collateral Damage was a subtitle. And that's really what it was. My dad's was gambler. He loved me. He would never have done anything on purpose to cause me any harm for the game. But the fact that he was a gambler, the fact that others, bookies, knew he was a gambler, I'm sure this bookie was trying to make some contact, because that's how these crime figures, these gamblers and these bookies who want to fix games. And also happens, I've been reading up on it, with, like, one was a college roommate of a player on a team that was found shaving points. And the roommate, who didn't play basketball, was losing money in gambling. And he then tried and did influence his roommate to miss some free throws. What you do is I made two free throws to win the game against Missouri with 3 seconds to go, and we were down by 1 point. As a freshman, I made two free throws against the varsity team. You couldn't play varsity at that time, and they were sixth in the nation, getting ready to go to the NCAA. We played a full dress-out refereed game, and we won. I scored 25 against our team then, with Roger Kaiser on it, who was All-American, and I made two free throws to win the game. But against Mississippi State, I didn't make them. So right. It looked like...
Right.
You know?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I'm getting it. This is what I think is so frustrating for, I think, the public to understand now. You know, it was new in those days. It was not well understood that this kind of thing was going on. Also, I guess, set me straight here if I'm getting it right. What the better bookie, your dad, whoever, what they want is, they want you to win within the spread, or they want you to make sure you cover the spread. If they're betting on you, and you guys are a 5-point favorite, they need you to win by 6. Vice versa, they could be betting against you. They don't want you to win at all. What are the combinations? How does this work?
Yeah, that's you've got it. From what I understand, the better games to fix are the 10-point spreads. And that way, the college player can win the game, but manage to not win it by more than 9 points,
mm-hmm.
you know, or whatever the
spread is.
He can win. He's easier to win by 6 or 7 points, 8 points, and have a 10-point spread. The gambler can win, and the player can win for his team.
So let me get
but
it right then.
Like a minus
yeah.
two or a minus
right.
three spread,
right.
then it's very difficult for that player to win for both parties.
So these knuckleheads, yeah. they want to get the best side of the odds, right? So they
right.
would like to have a winning bet on the underdog, but the underdog usually carries a point spread to help them. So they would like the good team, you, to get right into that spread. So you guys can
right.
get your win and your trophy, but they can get
right.
a quadruple payout because they backed
yeah.
the worst team.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And they know that it's hard to get college players to lose games for their team. But if you let that college player think that, hey, you can win the game, but you can also pick up $2,500 or $20,000 is what it would have been valued back in 1961, 62
mm-hmm.
for today's dollars, you can pocket a lot of money if you just don't win by as many points as the spread.
So, Frank, I got two quick questions, and I want to ask a reflective question, but here's the two quick ones. The story is so vivid, the details so provocative, and sports has all kinds of mixed reputations right now. If someone grabbed this book and bought the rights for a film, this does sound like it's got a movie in it.
Well, I lived the nightmare for 25 years trying to get back on the team. I took another 25 years for me to finally get the facts enough, clear enough, that I felt confident enough to write the book. I had Bobby Crimmins did the foreword for the book, and he made a really good comment. He was the winningest basketball coach for Georgia Tech. He was the basketball coach in 1987 and 88. He started in 81 and finished in 2000, but in 87 is when my coach told me this story. In 88, I wrote a letter to my coach, and I sent a copy to Bobby Dodd, and those two made the decision, and then I also sent it to Coach Crimmins to try to explain to Coach Crimmins, who was the coach, that he should warn his players that they need to be aware that gamblers are all around them. And it could be a friend of the family. They need to be proactive. That's the second thing. They need to be ready. If anybody mentions anything about a game or gambling, they need to tell their coach. They need to be proactive so they don't get caught up in something that has nothing to do with them, but just because they were around that person or took a phone call from, I should have gone right to my coach. My coach Hyder would have been really wise to have had somebody like me come in and speak to his team and say, you need to be aware of who you're around at home or here in classes, even in your own dorm room, because you're an impact player maybe on my team, and you need to know that you're a target. And so the other thing is that it's never going away. In 1951 was the first big scam deal that was uncovered in New York. Then 1961, 62, when I was playing, that came about again. Then it hits again in 1970s, hits again in 1990s, hits again in 2000s. I mean, this is not going away, but it kind of just goes quiet. And then players are caught unassumed, coaches are caught unaware, and their players are pulled into this scheme and scam of racketeers. It's never going away because money's getting bigger on betting. Kids are learning how to gamble quicker. These college kids are gambling, losing thousands of dollars, and they're always looking for a way to fix a bet. So fixes are in football. They're anywhere
oh, yeah.
it's betting.
Right. No, I listen.
Horse racing,
right,
everywhere.
I hear, you know, my New York Jets only had a great day back in 1963. That's all I've gotten out of my Jets. And that one's been tainted by was that Super Bowl messed with. Tainting and accusing, investigating, that can do damage as well as findings.
Exactly. Exactly. How many guys are out there like me that had no idea, still never will know, because they will not have had that conversation with their coach, and it was always kept under the they don't want, schools don't want bad publicity,
right?
And rather than even bring things up, they might play a card on a player, and that player be eased out without them realizing why. But and it could be all incorrect, all superficial evidence.
Horrible, horrible.
But that's the story, and I don't hold any bad ill toward my coach. Once I understood it, and I had a conversion in my life in December 27, 1970, where I was a heavy drinker. I almost died in college my senior year from alcohol and taking uppers and downers, and I was on this destructive course, and I had this spiritual revival with a decision for Christ in my heart. Well, that changed me. That I was bitter toward Georgia Tech. I hated my coach. But that gave me a whole new perspective. If I could be forgiven the guy I was by the Lord, I surely could forgive my coach, who was only trying to do what he knew to do with the evidence that he had.
Exactly.
And our miscommunication,
right,
was that he had the courage to at least come and tell me finally, when I asked him in that, after that alumni game, up in the reception room, a lot of people were drinking, and I wasn't. And I thought to myself, told my wife, I said, here we are. I got kicked off for drinking, and everybody drinks.
Right.
And then that thought flashed through my head that the FBI was following the team, and somebody had said that, but it didn't register at the time. 25 years later, it registers, and I asked my coach, he just comes up to say hi. I said, Coach, you surely didn't think I was fixing games. And so he had courage enough, he was honest enough to finally let me know the truth, which released me,
right,
from that horrible feeling that my life had been changed because of breaking curfew one time.
Exactly. So, right. You really thought it was something else altogether. So now the question that becomes most important, I think, for the kids yet to come up in collegiate and scholastic athletics, the challenge to coaches, teams, universities at large, could it be extracted from sport? Could we get betting out of there as deep as it's burrowed in? If that's a no, then are safeguards ever going to be airtight, or we're going to have to be one step behind bad guys who are looking for new ways to do the same old bad thing?
Exactly. That's the issue. And, of course, they've changed the game a little bit. See, when I played, you didn't have the three-point play. That came in like 1985 or 86. You didn't have the shot clock, the over and the under, you could control an over and under a lot better back in when I played than you could today. So they tried to do some things, the shot clock, they tried to do some things to keep this from being so easily done.
Right.
Well, the other thing is the coaches have to be proactive. The players have to be proactive. They have to be forewarned that this is never going away. And, you know, you got the freedom to bet, and people are going to bet, and people are going to get in in deep. Some people are going to bet too much, and when they do, they're going to do things they would never do otherwise. It's like a drinker. A drinker gets drunk, and when they get drunk, they're very likely to do things they would never do otherwise. Now, should we take away drinking? No, you can't. We tried that. It didn't work. Well, you can't take away gambling. That won't work. But what you could do is be more proactive, and especially the coaches and the players for all of these sports where there is betting.
Do you see kids now, right, at this age, collegiate, high school players, right? It's always going to revolve around the best players because they're the make or break. But
right. You see,
they're attached to that phone. They got that phone going all the time. Does it ever worry you, oh, boy, this is where the bad guys are going to go in. They're going to start with that internet. They're going to start with that web. They're going to start with that crazy phone that does everything. There's a million other ways into these kids today instead of an overt phone call before the game. Hi, may I speak to Frank Landry? Our point guard? Yes, I'd just like to speak to him for a moment. You know, that could stand out, but if it's blip,
right,
blip, blip on the phone there, and also you got some horrible poverty that kids still, this day, sports is going to be the ticket out of. So, you know, when the money is even mentioned, you know it's part of why they're playing so hard, because they want to break their cycle of poverty. With all of that in the mix, are you concerned?
Well, you know, I think you have to be concerned. I don't think there's anything that you can actually do or say that's going to change a young man or even a young woman's. I suppose they'll be betting on every kind of sport. We didn't have many women's sports when we played, but now, if they can make a bet or a wager on it, and these kids are trying to get out of their poverty background,
right?
They're always going to be susceptible. But I think if they can be forewarned, and you know, a movie would help, and the book could help,
right?
And any parent or any relative that has a young impact player coming up, they should actually go online if they only spend $2.99 and put this down on a Kindle, download the book on a Kindle. They'll be able to let them read that book and get some impact on what it could be to their life if they're just not willing to be aware of what could happen. They need to be aware. And once they're aware, it'd be a lot harder for anyone to try to influence them to gamble, because you know, players who they 79 years old, there was a player for Kentucky, and he had his whole career ruined because of him getting a loan from a gambler. And he said, you know, if that loan, even before 2 years before he died at 79 years old, he said, you know, that loan, I never paid it back, but I never influenced a game for it, and I lost everything over it.
Wow. Well, so, I'm working on a draft script. I've got a working title for you. I love your title. But how about if we were going to sell a movie, we call it Close Shave, and then shave is the dollar sign, and we get a basketball up there. Am I sounding crazy?
Hey, you put it together, and I'd love to do anything I can to help young players coming up, and even all the players, you know, that are in the game today, those that are going to be competing on Thursday and Friday in the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
I mean, these players need to be aware that and what happens is they go through, they fix a few games, and they win the national championship. It's been teams that have actually won the national NCAA championship, and years later, it's uncovered, and they lose everything because of a few bad decisions,
right,
back when they were playing in college, and they got away with it in college, but it surfaced later. These things happen when the evidence comes forward, and all of a sudden they start digging up these things, and then the player ends up confessing, and now all their career and all that success is gone.
All gone. Instantly. Just shatters,
yep,
like that. Wow.
Right,
I'm telling you, it's a powerful, powerful story. It's a cautionary tale. And if you want to know more of the details about what Frank Landry and I have been discussing here. As he says, just go get the book online. From Hero to Zero is the title. Frank Landry, the author, available on Amazon, obviously, which everything is, and also at miapress.org. But remember the title, Frank Landry, our guest, and the book, From Hero to Zero. Thank you so much for sitting with us today, man. This was a great
look. Thank you so
much. No, really, it's a big problem. You have a unique point of view on it. A real education, Frank. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
The Ed Till Show on Starcom Radio Network. AM/FM stations all across America. Frank Landry, what a great guest. What a valuable perspective. That's wisdom talking there. How often, how many topics a week come up and you say, boy, we need more wisdom. We need folks who have been there, have had time for reflection. They see what the decisions of literally, I'm using the word kid with quotes around it, but a kid's decision can do, a bad decision, to destroy a future. Frank Landry, the book From Hero to Zero on the Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network.